put together a quick report for the Assembly and the public today. One of the main things that we are dealing with as an EOC team is the changes to State Mandate 10, the interstate travel mandate. As many people know, the governor made an announcement last week that starting August 11th, there will be changes to the mandate that eliminates the possibility of a quarantine for anybody coming in from out of state, any non-residents coming in from out of state, and requires those non-residents to get a test 72 hours before departure for Alaska. There was very little detail on that plan, and so his staff has been putting together information for all the different communities that this affects, Petersburg being one of them. And we did get a brief note, still no written plan from the state, but we did get an email this morning from his staff at DHSS that says they're going to be moving towards a travel portal system, which is basically an electronic system that all passengers coming into the state will access, must access, and provide their the results of their test. It'll have access to a voucher system. Still not 100% sure on what that looks like and how it's going to work, but that seems to be the direction they're going. So we'll be, as a EOC team and the greeters and screeners, testers at the airport, will be undergoing some changes, but the extent of that isn't fully known yet. I wanted to mention that the community protective plan that I'm working on is moving forward. I got a first really rough draft out to members of the team and hospital staff, and received some good feedback from that. So I'm hoping to get a second draft out on that this week for internal review. As predicted, I think the hardest part of that is to define the metrics and trigger points for moving from one status risk level to another. And it's, of course, very important to get that right. We don't want to be bouncing back and forth between green and yellow, or yellow and orange or red, any more than we absolutely have to. It needs to be a fairly stable system, so that people have time to react and respond adequately in consideration of what the virus is doing in Petersburg. Happy to say that as of today, we're still looking very good. We have two active cases on the books for Petersburg, but those were the two non-residents that basically just passed through from the airport to the harbor and then left. And we did get information that those two travelers are in Juneau now and are isolating up there until they can travel out of the state. One item that we've heard a lot about, it's been, a pretty common topic of discussion around town, is the post office situation. Looking at it from the EOC perspective, it is definitely a problem to have that many people congregated in an enclosed space. And we definitely feel for the postmaster and her staff of one right now, trying to deal with the mail and the packages that are coming in. So we did push out some suggestions for the community just today. Hopefully that will allay some concerns from the public, and we'll be able to support our post office until they get some additional help, which hopefully will be middle of this month. Also wanted to mention that the EOC will fully support whatever decision is made by the Assembly for a community meeting regarding the permanent civil emergency ordinance, and we'll wait to hear direction on that and respond accordingly. I think that's my report for today, Mr. Mayor. Happy to take questions if there are any.
Okay, thank you, Carl, for that report. Any questions of Mr. Hagerman today?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, if I may.
Member Lynn.
Yeah, Carl, I've seen at least one memo from the state regarding what our authorities might be to require or to enforce different kind of things like masking and so forth. Was there any discussion in your last week's meeting about these authorities and any further follow-up from the state attorney general's office?
You know, I did saw a memo regarding that issue, and I think it's pretty clear that the governor's office has taken the tact of fully supporting local municipalities in their efforts to protect their populations, and is actually urging local assemblies and elected bodies to take any action that they feel is appropriate. And so much so that, the legal department, state's lawyers have, attorney general have come out with some information asserting that, and just to make sure that all of the communities know that they have that power and authority to move forward with protective actions as they see fit. As an EOC team, we haven't discussed the need to take action. In Petersburg, the assembly is the elected body, and as has been the case throughout the pandemic, if there are larger issues, mandates that need to be recommended or should be recommended to the assembly, they're elevated to that level. But at this time, I'm working on the community plan. In my mind, that's the next large issue for the assembly to consider. But it is important to point out to the assembly that the state is recognizing that the body does have the authority to take action, and is encouraging that all over the state.
Thank you.
Any other questions, Mr. Hagerman, today?
Sure, Mr. Mayor.
Member Mucci.
Thank you. I guess in a follow-up to Senator Lynn's question, I mean, I'm not sure if he's talking about mandating masks, but, I mean, if we do end up headed that way, where do we deal with the enforcement issue on some of these ideas? Thank you.
That is a very good question. Enforcement is kind of the crux of the problem of developing mandates in the first place. If you don't have enforcement worked out ahead of time, then it's really the mandates are very hollow, and they don't hold any weight. We've seen it with the state of Alaska's mandates throughout the pandemic, that even though they were backed up by a substantial fine and in jail time, if they were violated, there's been no enforcement whatsoever. And EOC has asked the state a couple times as the situation has changed over the course of the summer if enforcement was going to be part of the state's response, and both times the answer has been no, that it's an education process, and that the state is expecting the population to do the right thing. And while that's it's a great thought, and I think that most people, knowing getting the information of the best practices and recommendations from the state of Alaska, will try to follow them. There are a number of people that won't without some teeth. And so back to the question of enforcement in Petersburg, if local mandates are enacted, there will need to be some discussions about that and some direction given to our local police department for expectations for enforcement and what that looks like. It's a very large and touchy issue, and if there are mandates put in place that do require masking, for instance, I think the example that Juneau has given of a very low fine is a good example, and it provides that teeth, but it's not $500 or $1,000 for every time you violate it. That's a little bit unreasonable, I believe, and I think most people would probably agree with that. Nobody wants to get a $25 ticket either. I think from what I've heard from travelers that Juneau has been successful with their masking mandate overall. I have no idea if they're writing citations up there or not, but from what I've heard from other people that have gone through Juneau, that it's there's a lot of compliance right now, and so that's a good thing. Did that answer your question, Member Mucci?
Yes, it did. Thank you very much.
Any other questions of Mr. Hagerman today? I guess I just have one, Carl. When do you think the community protective plan will be, presented to the assembly for our review? Are we a couple weeks out, or?
I would hope. Excuse me. I would hope that by the next assembly meeting that I'll have a draft for you to look at. I will not be in town for that meeting, but I hopefully will be able to call in still and participate. We're getting closer, but it is a very delicate situation coming up with the actions that should occur at each level. Wasn't that hard, but as I said, the trigger points and the metrics is tricky. The state of Alaska is spending some time to try and provide more detailed information to our state via their website, and was involved in a meeting with Dr. Zink last week where she explained the added detail that they're trying to provide so that mostly so that communities can develop protective plans and have information that will guide them on when to step up protective actions and when to when you're able to relax those actions. So a lot of detail, but to answer your question, I'm hopeful to get a second draft out for review this week, and if I have any luck and the time to complete it, maybe a draft to the assembly by the second meeting in August.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much. I'll ask one more time. Are there any other questions from assembly members? Okay, thank you, Mr. Hagerman.
You're welcome.
So that brings us to report of other officers continued. That's the mayor's report. The first topic on there is I'd like to wish condolences on behalf of the Petersburg community. I wish to extend sincere condolences to the families of the four young adults involved in the vehicle accident last week. Words cannot express the heartache, and we stand in support with Wrangell during this difficult time and with the families of all involved. Next item on the mayor's report is Borough Assembly Meeting Forum. There was an article in the paper a couple weeks ago that insinuated that we were meeting improperly because of ordinances that had expired. And so I just wanted to dig into that a little bit. And one of the things that people were having trouble with around town was the one comment that since no one objected, then it's okay. But there's more to it than that as an explanation. So I talked with the attorney, met with the manager and the clerk, and this is what we came up with, and this is a response to the people concerned about our actions. In response to numerous inquiries that I received, I wanted to address the issue of assembly members in person versus teleconference appearance at assembly meetings and provide the public with additional information to address these questions. In response to the, this kind of gives a little time frame, timeline here. In response to the COVID-19 pandemic and the restrictions on public gatherings, the Assembly unanimously adopted on March 16, 2020, Emergency Ordinance Number 2020-07, which amended Borough Code Section 3.08.080 to establish a quorum of the Assembly by teleconference. On March 20, 2020, the Assembly unanimously adopted Emergency Ordinance 2020-08, which established civil emergency provisions under Chapter 3.72 of the Code. These provisions were continued by Emergency Ordinance 2020-17, adopted May 18, 2020, and again by Emergency Ordinance 2020-22, adopted July 24, 2020. On April 3, 2020, under the authority of the civil emergency provisions of Chapter 3.72.060 of the Borough Code, Incident Commander Hagerman issued Public Health Mandate Number 3. This suspended in-person participation at assembly meetings. This applies to both assembly members and members of the public. Public Health Mandate Number 3 was extended on June 1, 2020, and amended on June 15, 2020, to continue suspension of in-person participation by the public, but to allow for assembly member in-person participation at the discretion of the individual members. Public Mandate Number 3 supersedes any conflicting local ordinance, which would include the ordinance calling for in-person attendance at assembly meetings by at least four members. Upon realization that Ordinance 2020-07, which made the technical amendments to Section 3.08080, had expired on April 30, 2020, the Assembly adopted Emergency Ordinances Number 2020-20 and 2020-21, which once again made technical amendments to that section. These were adopted to clarify the Assembly's intent in this area. However, Health Mandate Number 3 already addresses this issue. On July 24, 2020, the Assembly adopted Emergency Ordinance Number 2020-22, which continued the civil emergency provisions and specifically allows for establishment of a quorum of the Assembly via teleconference. Ordinance 2020-22 will expire September 21st of 2020. Accordingly, the Borough Assembly did not violate Borough Code by allowing a quorum to be established via teleconference after the expiration of Ordinance 2020-07. During all Assembly meetings, the Assembly fully complied with Health Mandate 3, as well as the Open Meetings Act, and the public was able to participate by email or telephone and certainly did so. This information has been verified with the Borough Attorney. And the next topic on the mayor's report today is a meeting that I attended with Southeast mayors. We met with Governor Dunleavy on July 21st. He contacted governors from all over the state, district by district, that day. And what he was doing, I think, was just feeling out the different communities for what mandates they had in place, what mandates they would be willing to put in place. And at that time, on the 21st, only one of the Southeast communities had adopted mandatory masking, for instance, and that was Juneau, and they did that on July 20th. During our discussions, the Sitka mayor said they just had a meeting shortly before the 21st about masking, and that mandatory masking mandate failed with a 4-3 vote. The Ketchikan mayor and borough mayor talked, and it sounded like they had a town hall meeting at the Ted Ferry Center, and the majority of the people at that time were against mandatory masking. And when it was my turn to speak, I just went over the numbers that Petersburg had experienced to that date and mentioned how long it was taking to get the test results back from the airport, you know, up to 2 weeks. And I mentioned the one case about someone coming to town, testing, going out and camping in a Forest Service cabin, coming back, going home, and then they get the results and they're positive. So one good thing that came out of, you know, that, you know, discussion or me mentioning that to the governor was a couple of days after the meeting, I got a call from Mayor Sievertson from Ketchikan. And he said there's an entity in Ketchikan that was looking at buying a machine that would do tests within, you know, you get your results in a couple of hours. And he just wanted to reach out and let Petersburg know if and when that became available, that would potentially be an avenue for us to get test results sooner than what we are receiving them now. So I passed that information along to the manager. He passed it along to Commander Hagerman, and I'm not sure where the discussion has gone from there. I can't remember the name of the machine. It's kind of a bio respiratory testing machine. So that was about it from that that meeting. I think it was just the governor reaching out and seeing what municipalities had done and were willing to do. And that was that for that part of the report. And then we're seeking letters of interest still from interested borough residents to serve on the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board until October 6th at the municipal election. We still have three vacant seats. And if people are really interested, they should go down to the borough office and get a petition form or whatever signature form to get their name put on the ballot. And that is all I have today for the mayor's report. Excuse me, that brings us to the manager's report.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The streets crew repaired two failing pilings under the Rasmussenge Bridge. Although the bridge deck planking remains sound, it's starting to deteriorate, and we're going to have to take a look at what, as far as what we'll have to replace in the next 1 to 2 years. They also worked and repaired a failing embankment at the North Harbor snow dump. The slope was rebuilt with rock and some concrete placed on top. We've been having some HVAC issues here in the mini building. I think we've got them worked out. We found a vendor in Anchorage that specializes in the equipment that we've got, and so that's been a big help. Hopefully that will fix some of the problems we were having. The borough has been approached by PIA to sell 705 IRA 2, it's a vacant lot, to Tlingit-Haida Regional Housing Authority directly for $36,500. The property had previously been determined not needed for a public use and was included in a public land sale authorized under Resolution 2016-14, but had no interested buyers. Tlingit-Haida and PIA have received COVID-19 grant funding to alleviate overcrowding and address housing insecurity and wish to construct a duplex on that property. The property would be purchased by Tlingit-Haida and ownership would be transferred to PIA upon completion of the duplex construction. They will be asking the Assembly to approve a direct sale at the August 20th Assembly meeting. Water Department staff has been busy marking underground water lines in preparation for PIA's sidewalk project on 12th Street in Houken. Thanks to Reed Brothers Construction, they achieved substantial completion on the Casino Street sewer project with only two items to finish up. Actually, they have already finished up. Project area looks good. The sewer main is operating as designed, and the neighborhood is back to being quiet again. The department will be working with Alan Murph to close out the project. A portion of the Petersburg distribution power distribution system experienced an outage on Saturday, July 25th. A porcelain insulator on a cutout broke and caused a fault there by opening the T62 breaker, or feeder, excuse me. This feeder powers homes and businesses from Scow Bay to the core of town. Power and light line crew replaced the broken cutout, restored power to all affected within an hour. Power and light has continued on the finishing up the substation refeed project. The recent good weather allowed for the line crew to rework the feed to Hammer Slough Street a step prior to demolishing the span. And as I look out my window, I think we're almost done with that. Hydro lakes are full and spilling. Crystal Lake has been above and below the spillway, but within 2 or 3 feet, either way, for a couple of weeks, going back and forth as the rain goes. So we're in good shape there. Tyee Lake is spilling at 1,400 feet of elevation, and Swan Lake is being operated via a spill control gate to maintain an elevation of 342 feet. And is up on the splash guards. So good news on all of our hydro. Borough's grants to nonprofit arts organizations Mitkoff Dance Troupe and Clausen Museum will be matched by the Rasmussen Foundation. Each organization will receive an additional $10,000. So thank you to Rasmussen. The reopening has occurred at the community center. Pool has been open for a while. We're in the middle of finishing up plans for the weight equipment. A lot of patronage during the morning swim, averaging 12 to 14 people the first few days, and it's dropped off since then. Not many using the mezzanine, so we'll see how that goes. And we are attempting to add the shower usage to our reopening plan. I believe that is now done, so people can take a shower down there. We've moved some fitness equipment into the activity room and treadmills into that room to make kind of a cardio room for folks. Weights will be spread out and extended into the cardio section of the weight room, hoping to reopen the fitness equipment this week, and kind of depends on just getting everything done that makes our mitigation plan work. She Lynn at the Manor has been working on a facility reopening plan to allow outside visitors to assisted living. This is kind of tricky. Both the residents and family have requested to be allowed visitation, and it's affecting their mental health in a lot of ways. So we need to do something here. She Lynn and her staff have done a great job with FaceTime and everything that's available, but folks kind of want to see their families. So we're working through that, and hopefully we'll come up with a good plan that'll still keep everybody safe. Thanks to Petersburg Medical Center staff, which did voluntary asymptomatic testing on residents and staff at the Manor on July 17th. I think the results have come back, and we're in good shape so far. The compressor in the assisted living boiler room died. Brian Haley was able to help us out, and Taylor and Sons are on their way to come and replace the new compressor that we had already had on hand as a spare. Assisted living and elderly housing fire panel, the supply card for the power for the panel failed. It needs to be replaced. Johnson Controls has it ordered and should be here sometime this week. In the meantime, we have been having the staff do hourly fire checks in both buildings, documenting and faxing the fire marshal daily, working through there to make sure that the place is kept safe. The library's Art Education Endowment received a major donation from former Petersburg resident John McCabe, the founder of the fund. The balance of the fund now exceeds $119,000. This fund provides financial assistance to the library that is spent exclusively on art and cultural programs. The annual interest earnings provide a stable, ongoing funding source to enhance arts programming at the library. So, again, thanks to John McCabe. And the library has been launched a podcast that archives our weekly radio programs. You can subscribe on iTunes or listen at PSGLIB.org/podcast. And our summer reading program ends on August 11th. And so those of you interested in that, please get involved. And that's it for my report.
Thank you, Steve. Are there any questions of the manager on his report? Okay, hearing none. Item 14, unfinished business. There are no items under that category today. That brings us to 15, item 15 on the agenda, new business. First item under new business is resolution 2020-13. This is a resolution approving the expenditure of $778,000 from the CARES Act Special Revenue Fund for Petersburg School District personnel costs, technology equipment and PPE/disinfection supplies in response to the continuing COVID-19 health emergency. I would entertain a motion to adopt this resolution.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, motion's been made by Member Mucci, I believe, seconded by Member Lynn, and then there was another second. So we have a motion and a second. That brings us to discussion on this topic. Any discussion or questions? And I just have one. I'd like to ask if the Superintendent Erica Klute Painter is still on the line, available to answer questions, if there are any.
She is. Scott, if you could please unmute Erica Klute-Painter.
The line is now open.
Okay, thank you, Scott. So, Erica, I don't know if there will be any questions, but I just had you unmuted and we just got to the resolution for the talk about the request of the CARES Fund. So, any discussion by assembly members?
Yes, if I might, Mr. Mayor.
Member Lynn.
Yeah, and the question would go to Erica. Has this request been approved by the school board, by the your policy committee?
The request has not been approved specifically by the school board. This has just come through our regular, you know, financial department here.
Is it on your agenda for your next meeting?
It's not officially on the agenda. We made a request in June, you know, similarly based off the needs that we have identified, you know, through our regular process. The school board members are well aware of the request. You know, I certainly ran it all past them, but it has not been formally adopted in that sense.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other discussion or questions of the superintendent?
Sure, Mr. Mayor.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
Member.
Thank you. I don't have any questions for Superintendent Klute-Painter, but what I would like to do is recognize the efforts from the admin team of the school district trying to create a workable educational system for our students in this pretty unworkable world we're dealing with right now in terms of travel, education, et cetera. And for those listening at home, and Erica, you cut me off if I'm speaking out of line, countless hours have been spent by people trying to develop this so we can give our kids the best education possible. It's an unfortunate situation that we need to make adaptations to our educational system right now, but I'll most certainly be voting yes, because there are no guarantees in how education is going to be looking nationwide this fall. There's no way we can guarantee that X, Y, or Z will work. Everyone's just trying their best, and I think by using this CARES money to support the school district right now, we're doing our best to take a shot at giving our kids good education, because that's really what the goal is all about. And I speak both as an assembly member and as a parent, wanting to have the most workable solution for, you know, families and kids right now. So I'll definitely be voting yes, and I appreciate the efforts by the district.
Any other discussion or questions of the superintendent by assembly members?
Mr. Mayor.
Member Mucci.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. You know, we did get a letter from the president of the school board. You know, originally I was a little hesitant to kind of vote on this. For me, if I get a request from the school board, it makes me feel better that the school board has spent some time looking at this. And I talked to one member of the school board today and one yesterday, and, you know, they're comfortable with this. We see that letter. You know, one of the questions I have is that, so we're looking at like $750,000, you know, in addition to the 1.8 that's the borough. So is this $778,000, is this a one-time thing? Or are we looking, is this going to expire in November, December, and we'll be looking for additional requests? And then I had a few other questions regarding, you know, the additional teaching staff, but I'll just wait to hear the first answer and we can go from there. Thank you.
Erica, are you on the line?
I am. I don't know if it's unmuted. Can you not hear me?
Yeah, you're coming in fine.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, so thanks for the question, Jeff. It is, at this time, this is a one-time request, and as you can see from that, you guys already know the dates on the December 31st, so really we're plunging into this, you know, looking at staffing and knowing that you know, we're hopeful for the next bill that's coming through from the feds. Supposed to be coming out with another school allocation here in the fall. We don't know what that will look like. This has been part of the challenge throughout the spring and summer related to this whole issue of staffing and, you know, how to adequately prepare, where we are, you know, essentially taking a lot of leaps of faith here, you know, trying to move through this and, you know, funding, you know, decisions being made at times that are later than when we, you know, are expecting to start providing education for our kids. So that's been extremely challenging this year. So I would say that if this funding goes through and it's approved, this, you know, we're really looking through December 31st. Now, the equipment and supplies and materials, of course, are hopefully, you know, they're here. So that's those kinds of, you know, allocations would be more of the one-time allocation. But the staffing is, you know, that would be something we're going to have to look into our own budget. We could potentially be coming back to the borough. We're hopefully going to be getting another federal, you know, allocation, but it looks to be September, maybe even October, which is really unhelpful for schools that are trying to start up in August and September. So that's as much as we know right now.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I guess a follow-up question is, if the borough doesn't, or the CARES Act funding doesn't come through, how would we be expected to pay for this additional funding? Are we looking at some type of revenue enhancement, or I'm just trying to sort a few things out here? Thank you.
Who's the question for, Member Mucci?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I guess whoever can answer it, I'm guessing the superintendent.
I would say that if – oh, sorry.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I would say that I've discussed this a bit with Steve and Jody, just kind of brainstorming through that, and I would say that it's possible we would be – I mean, we would clearly be looking at our own – fund balance at that point, and then we would potentially be coming back to maybe look at secure rural schools funding if that was the only available amount of money.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions or discussion on this resolution for the funding? Well, if there's no other questions, I had a question. Same as Member Lynn, so that's been answered already about as it's been vetted by the school board. And I guess that doesn't really throw up a big red flag for me, but I would like to have seen it vetted through the school board. And then one of the other questions I have to the superintendent. So you're talking about new positions, teachers, and I guess we don't know how long this situation is going to last, but if we hire new teachers, would they be permanent, or would their contracts be just until this situation went away, or what's the position on that?
Thanks for that question. Yes, the positions at this point will be posted as temporary positions, and that's kind of the ebb and flow of this whole issue. So, you know, our goal would be to maintain the teachers that we are able to potentially hire, and they would provide that support, whether it's in person or remote, and provide collaborative support to the teachers and the students and families as we're moving through this, you know, possibly changing, you know, in person and remote, and depending on quarantines and mandates and all those kinds of things. So, at this point, they would be temporary positions.
Okay, thank you for that answer. And I guess this answer would probably be for the clerk, or not the clerk, but the finance director or the manager. So we have $2.4 million roughly left in this CARES fund balance that the borough received, minus 150-ish, so $2.3 million. Was any of this money going to be used for borough functions other than school? And will this expenditure, if we vote to give this $780,000 to the school, will that affect our plans, or do we even have any concrete plans for the money? So Steve or Jody?
I'll start off and Jody can jump in.
Okay.
This is Steve. We didn't have concrete plans, Mr. Mayor. We were actually going to offset our first responder salaries, and which allows us to, you know, cover those costs, both regular and additional, that have impacted us because of COVID. That allows us to keep the general fund at a healthy balance, and potentially that money could be used going forward for things like school bond debt reimbursement, the general fund, not CARES fund, which is not allowed. So, again, not very specific, although we have been talking about, you know, potential utility rebates. We've been talking about, you know, maybe another grant program for businesses. And clearly, if there's fewer amounts of money in that fund, then we have to look harder at those, at adding anything else to what we're already doing. Jody, can you jump in?
The only thing I would add is probably an allocation to the medical center at some point if they need it.
Yeah, good point. Forgot about them.
Right, and we haven't had that request yet, to my knowledge. I was just wondering if we vote to dedicate the $780,000 to the school, if there's enough money left for us to potentially move forward with our plans for the first responders and to hopefully cover their expenses during this time and have money left, like you said, to have a healthy general fund coming in the next budget cycle.
Well, Mr. Mayor, this is Jody Tao. It all depends on a few things. It depends on how much the medical center needs. It depends if the school needs more. It depends on if something, you know, there's a lot of unforeseen things that could happen. If the medical center asks for $750,000 and we want to do something with grants, we were looking at like $600,000 of grants. So there wouldn't be enough to code public safety, EMS, first responder expenses to for the remaining end of the year. So it's an ebb and flow. So
yes, it's a very fluid position here. So I was thinking about this today, and I fully believe in school funding and education. And looking at what Congress is doing right now, they're pretty far apart between the Democrats and the Republicans on how much money they're going to fund and when they're going to fund it. But there is, it appears like funding that will be dedicated to schools and the medical centers. I guess one question for the superintendent would be, would it work to, instead of giving the whole $780,000 to divide it up by the number of months that you need it and give you, you know, incremental payments in case you get money from the federal government if they come up with another stimulus package? Just trying to, I don't know if we'd be playing devil's advocate, but keep as much money in the balance as we can. So I guess that's more of a thought than a question, but would that potentially work?
I think the only issue that might come up with that, and I do know what you're saying, and it's kind of like what I was saying about the, you know, the decision possibly being made in September by the feds about what might come to schools in that sense. It's the cost, the outlay that for the majority of this is really happening, you know, now, and actually a lot of it has already taken place because we've been trying to stay ahead of you know, ordering and planning for this in person. So we've been moving forward with some of these purchases because we just knew we would need them regardless if we're trying to do these things in person. So that's the only problem with that, is just the outlay is happening, you know, now. I mean, the hiring teachers, the finishing up on technology, making sure that we're getting the right custodial staff and, you know, preparing for all those things. So that's the only caveat, I guess I would say to that. So I'm not sure if that would help our situation in that sense.
Okay, thank you, and then for the responses. So any other discussion on this?
Mr. Mayor?
Yeah, if I can.
Member Lynn, then Member Mucci.
Yeah, yes, Mayor, I had some of the same questions along the line you are, that you're at. When we look at the funds we have available, we don't know what's going to happen with the future here. If we had an outbreak, obviously we're going to have to do more testing and do a lot more. It's going to cost a lot more. And to keep our businesses, and then I'm going to turn to the businesses, there's probably need for another type of package to help some of our businesses in town that probably needs to develop. And back to something you said earlier, the manager said, if we got the school bond debt that we have to look at next year, what can we do to preserve ourselves or preserve our funding such that we do not have to pass that school bond debt along? Going back to something, though, that the superintendent talked about, I can see the point she's trying to make is that when you have to make commitments to hire people up front here, and I can see where the needs for some of that money comes from, but I also think there's a need to look in the future as to do some kind of a review on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Member Lynn. Member Mucci?
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. Now, I think we need to fund the school's request. We can make up. If there's an issue about more funding coming in and the borough doesn't have to kick in, we can deal with that next year in the budget process. But, yeah, right now, let's do it. I mean, the schools are under a great bit of pressure to kind of try and get open so that families have an option for their kids so that the education process can continue. So, yeah, I think we should do it. We have time this fall or winter to deal with any kind of financial issues that we need to address in the spring. So, yep, I'm all in. Thank you. I appreciate Erica's honest appraisal of what's going on. Thank you.
Any other discussion?
Yeah, I have one question.
Member Trimbley? Is that you or Member Moreau?
It's Member Moreau.
Okay, so go ahead, Member Moreau.
Yeah, this is a question for Erica. Without this additional funding, would you guys be able to operate as close to normal hours throughout the year as possible, assuming that we're in a green or low-risk situation?
At this time, we do not believe that is possible. The goal being at this point, you know, we're looking at a slow start, at a modified kind of A and B possibility, and the positions that we would be posting or hoping to post would be supporting that off-time learning. Oops. Sorry, it's back. It's echoing. Is it all right? Sorry, it sounded kind of funny. Is it on my end or your end? Sorry.
I can't determine where it's coming from. There's like 8 people on the line, so.
Okay. Well, I'll try again.
Thank you.
So we would be looking at providing, at you know, hiring teachers and support staff that would be able to help in this initial opening, even though it's slower than we want and fewer kids on campus at one time. But that is our goal, is to figure out the best way that we can, you know, do that in a way that's practical as possible with all the protocols and just the logistics involved. We don't love all of these logistics and all the protocols, but it is what it is. So we are trying to figure out the best way to do that. And of course, especially with younger kids, that's really a challenge. In general, they're busy, they move, this is going to be difficult. So we're, and not just getting them into the building, but also providing that, you know, an educational experience that is valuable and robust and really meets the kids' needs. So trying to do this, you know, we're going to have those staff members that are also available to help when the kids are off time because teachers that are teaching in the classroom will have a full day of teaching. They will just have smaller groups to try to work through all these logistics. So we're going to need some support for the regular classroom teachers. We want to do more outreach and support, especially with our families, because we know that was very challenging last spring for a lot of families and people with young children. It's extremely difficult. Middle and high school students have an easier time dealing with remote learning. They just do, and we have good systems in place for that. But the challenge is truly kindergarten through fifth grade, and we feel that. We know that. So the goal being that we could, you know, we're hoping to be able to expand those opportunities for kids on site, provide additional, you know, keep adding to those learning opportunities for kids to be in the building with their peers, and additional staff would then be, you know, reallocated to be looking at smaller groups in the building and just continuing to expand that way. I think the biggest concern we have, and I addressed that earlier, is just the sustainability factor. So much as I would love to wave my magic wand and say we're all coming in, you know, August 31st or whatever day we end up trying to pull this thing off, it is not trying to pull that all back, I think would be even more challenging for families and for students and for staff. You know, we're trying to plan and prepare for things that we're just still not sure are coming at us. So, you know, we're trying to aim down the middle of that road. So I don't know if that's helpful.
Do you have a follow-up, Member Morrell, or did that answer your question?
No, I think that answered my question. Thank you.
Okay. Member Tremblay, you had some input?
I did. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just wanted to thank you, Erica, and the school board for all the work you and the whole team have been doing. Thank you for the work session that happened, and to KFSK for hosting it, for anyone that wants more background on the decisions the school's been making. I think it's important that we support this. I share the concerns thinking about the upcoming unknown costs and other ways. The community is in need in a lot of different directions right now, and I understand feeling like we want to try to save this money for some of those unknowns, but the urgency of the school's request, given timing, given uncertainty with what's happening at the federal level, and given the burden that it's put on so many families, I think it's important that we support this and just keep a good dialogue going with the school and with other organized bodies in town about what they, you know, try the best to keep the good lines of communication going so we can plan accordingly. But at this point, it's very hard to plan for anything. So operating in good faith with each other and respecting the work you've put into the level of detail on this plan to me is very important. So thank you again for all the work you've been doing.
Okay, any other discussion or questions of the superintendent before I ask the clerk to call the roll? Debbie, will you call the roll?
Bob?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Chelsea?
Yes.
Randy?
Yes.
Okay, resolution 2020-13 passes unanimously with a 6-0 vote. That brings us back to the next item under new business. And this is a community meeting regarding ordinance 2020-19, an updated municipal code, chapter 3.72, civil emergency provisions. I don't know how to get this on the floor. We have two different suggestions. The direction, originally was to give the staff direction to, you know, help us come up with a plan for this meeting. And the manager came up with the plan, and Member Lynn has come up with the plan. So we need to have a motion in the positive to support one plan or the other. So That's the way I would see it. So is there a motion?
Mayor?
Mr. Mucci.
Yeah, thank you. I'd like to make a motion to take the city manager's recommendation for how the community conversation should go. I'm certainly available to amendments, but just for start of the conversation, start there. Thank you.
Okay, we have a motion to support Manager Giesbrick's suggestions on how to hold a this community information gathering meeting. Is there a second? Is there a second to get it on the floor for discussion?
I'll second it.
Okay, motion's been made by Member Mucci, seconded by Member Tremblay. And looking at both of these different ideas, in my mind, it could be put together, you know, and melded together or whatever to come up with a plan, but we need to at least, I think, come up with some kind of a baseline on how we want to move forward so we could get this advertised and organized and get the public input that we wanted. So any discussion on these two plans or amendments to Member Giesbrick or Manager Giesbrick's suggestions?
I have some thoughts. This is from Assemblymember Tremblay.
Okay.
To me, the biggest difference is who moderates the conversation, as well as it looks like on the manager's outline, there is room for being specific about the COVID response. And to my mind, I would like to make an edit to this. Personally, I like the idea of it being a outside moderator, maybe from the radio and maybe the paper moderating as well, just to, you know, keep the conversation flowing a little bit smoother so we can all be participants in that. And then on the second point, because this issue came up to us because we are in the middle of responding to a global pandemic, but it is something that we needed to deal with as an assembly anyway. And so personally, I would prefer finding a way to separate the COVID discussion from the discussion of the emergency response. And so that's my personal preference. I know we all will probably use our current situation as reference point for understanding how we're all navigating this, but that's kind of my thoughts, and I'm excited to hear what other people have to think about it.
Any more input?
Yes, I have.
Member
I agree with Chelsea on removing the COVID portion of it. This is supposed to be broader than our current situation, and I realize, just like she said, that this was brought up because of the situation we're in currently, but it's not supposed to be, I mean, it's supposed to be more of an overall, so I would like that to be removed as well.
Okay, so that's a little bit of input. I have, you know, kind of, I think maybe a third party fielding questions and running the meeting is a good idea, but then we have to, as an assembly, digest the information that we get out of this and then take that forward to the third reading. I would think that's how that would work. As far as, you know, getting in the manager's breakdown of the meeting, you know, I'll get an update from Carl, Phil, and Sandy, the EOC team, and have our attorney on the phone. I think those are good ideas, but I think it should be more questions of them instead of them giving a presentation. So you get their views on it. I guess we need everything, though. So any other discussion? And then we have to kind of come up with a time frame.
Yep.
Thanks. I'll go for it.
Yep.
Couple things that I enjoy. Thank you. I like the idea of gathering questions from the community in advance of the meeting. similar like how we've, you know, we've done through candidate forums, just really makes for efficient use of our time and in terms of being able to adequately research questions asked of the participants. I'm fine with a neutral party moderating that, and as you said, Mr. Mayor, we'll be digesting that information and taking it forward to the third reading sometime after that. And so I like Member Tremblay's idea on that one. My only hang-up, though, and it's a logistical one, is under meeting location of number 4B, public can come in person or call in on GCI-moderated line. I struggle with that one only in the context of, I don't know if Debbie or Steve or someone can answer that for me, is what would the logistics of that be? Because at face value, it kind of flies in the face of all the medical advice you're being given from Dr. Zink, the governor, et cetera, and I'd want to get some clarification if I could on that.
Mr. Mayor, may I respond?
Yes, Manager.
Sure. It was not going to be easy. The concept was going to basically put the podium right at the doors entering the assembly chambers and only allow one member of the public in at a time, and then have to have staff out in the hallway to try to keep everybody socially distancing in our kind of reception area, and then somebody downstairs controlling flow so that we don't have 40 people that try to come in all at the same time. Clearly, anything done in person adds a lot of complexity. But if I remember right, that was kind of part of the direction the assembly given us was that they wanted an in-person option. So that's why it's in there.
Oh, thank you, Steve. That clarifies that. I'll very clearly state I think that's an objectively bad idea. I wish we were in a time right now where we were all sitting in assembly chambers and we had a gallery full of people there to speak and interact, and that's, you know, really makes for a better meeting. But again, it pretty much flies in the face of really all medical advice we're getting right now. So my only real hang up is I would not be entertaining the live meeting for that. Thanks.
Any other input?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, if I might.
Yes, Member Lynn.
I think there's three decision points here to make. Are we going to use an outside moderator? One. Two, how are we going to handle the questions from the public? Because if you remember back, there was a number of folks who asked us questions, which, one, we weren't able to answer, and two, they were really very valid questions. We weren't able. So are we going to allow some interaction between the public and the experts on it, and or make a short upfront presentation? And then the third question I think comes up is what date are you going to pick? Were you going to pick to do this? And I guess I'd put a fourth in there, is the same one that Member Stanton Greger asked, is are we going to do this in person or are we going to do this remotely? Thank you.
Yeah, good point. I mean, when we had the discussion at the last assembly meeting and voted to postpone the third reading of this ordinance, I was hoping we, you know, could have a public forum, but that's not realistic. I mean, where do you have it? And as I give that more thoughts, I agree with Member Stanton Greger on that. A moderator I agree with, but I don't think it should be someone from the media. I think we might be able to find someone in town that has moderated meetings before that could be a neutral person, so I don't know how we go about finding that person. Reach out to the public and ask. It'd be nice if we didn't have to spend any money to get a moderator. As far as getting the question, we need the questions from the community to be basically put to us and somewhat answered by who, I'm not sure, administration or to the best they can, staff, and then have those questions and answers. That was part of the manager's way the meeting was going to take place or how it was going to the structure of the meeting. So I hope the
Mr.
public
Mayor,
listening. Hang on, Member Mucci, and you'll have the floor. So we need to come up with a moderator and a location and a date. I would think, what is a realistic date? Can we have it? We need to have it by the end of this month, I would think, and it's definitely going to be not at the same time as a regular meeting. Member Mucci?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. We've entertained motions over the last couple of months about COVID funding, and I mean, if the intent of the assembly is to have a moderator kind of help us wander through this path, there's money available to make this happen. I think we should try that path. And, you know, we're seeing lots of letters from folks who have questions about, I mean, I think it's probably time to have folks who have questions send them in. I mean, there might be a spot that the city clerk can kind of library these letters and questions, and then at some time city staff can determine if they're legal questions or political questions or health questions. I mean, I think we can do this. I don't think it's that big of a deal. It's just a matter of, you know, spending some time and making sure we get the questions that the community has answered. I mean, I think that no matter what happens, there's going to be a certain section of the community that is never going to be happy with whatever we're deciding. But at least it'll give the community a chance to kind of, you know, send their questions in, and, you know, they'll know when they get received, and they know that the assembly is honestly looking to answer some of their questions if they haven't been answered before. And yeah, I think we can do this. I don't have a problem at all with that, and I think we should be looking for, if the will of the assembly is to have an impartial person moderate this, I know there's a few people in town who have done this in the past, and I think it's just a matter of a phone call here or there, and I think we should pay those folks, because it's not going to be a pleasant evening. Thank you.